الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهد الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلله فلا هادي له ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له ونشهد أن سيدنا ونبينا وشفيعنا ومولانا محمدا عبده ورسوله صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وأصحابه وبارك وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا أما بعد فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى لا أقسم بيوم القيامة ولا أقسم بالنفس اللوامة أيحسب الإنسان أن لن نجمع عظامه بلى قادرين على أن نسوي بنانه صدق الله العظيم. Respected brothers and elders, there isn't a person who doesn't work towards a goal. If he's not working towards a goal, then you won't call him a human being. An ordinary laborer, worker, he waits to see the results of his work at the end of the day, end of the night, end of the week, end of the fortnight, or end of the month. The businessman works to see the end of the year, financial year, how he's done. He's got some projections, and he wants to see at the end of the year that did he conform to the projections that he had made or not. The project is to see that when my presentation, whatever I have offered him, then he's happy and pleased. So there isn't a person, there isn't a man who doesn't have a goal. He has a goal. Even the person that is playing ball, he also has a goal. And if he's working towards that goal, then he will enjoy looking at the game. But if he's not working towards a goal, he's just kicking around aimlessly, then you say, what is this person doing? He's wasting our time. We came here, we spent the money, we took out the time to see a game, not for him to play around with us. So he also has a goal. So every human being has some goal, some objective. Call it a goal, call it an objective, call it a direction, call it the end of his effort and accomplishment. So the surah commences, La uqsimu bi yawm al-qiyamah, that I call to witness, I take an oath by the day of qiyamah, the day of judgment. So that is the goal. We were all working towards that. That is the culmination of all the efforts. The efforts that you make by day, efforts that you make by night, the wealth that you spend in charity, the umrah that you go for, the hajj that you offer, the coming to the masjid and leaving the masjid, the acts of kindness and charities that we do, the rozas that we keep and fast, all these we are doing, and there is an end. And that end is called Qiyamah. And like that worker looks forward to the end, he looks forward to the end of the day, or end of the month, the day he's going to get the payout. The boss looks towards the end of the financial year, or perhaps end of the month, he looks at his profits. And he sees now, was it worth my effort or not? My perspiration, my time, my effort that I've put in, was it worth the while or not? So every person, every individual, every human being has got in this mind that I have to have some goal, and I need to see that I'm accomplishing or not. So similar is the case of a mu'min, he's working towards an end. His effort is not going wasted. Every moment that he's spending in a masjid, every moment that he's taking the name of Allah Ta'ala, every time that he's opening the Quran Sharif and reciting, then it is something that is going to his credit. So now, the culmination of all his effort is the day of Qiyamah, the day your eyes close. Then you're going to see the culmination of your effort. So, logically, you are supposed to be looking forward to that payment. If you analyze it, like that worker is looking forward to that culmination of his effort, the boss is looking forward to the financial year, then a mu'min is looking forward to that day. Nonetheless, but all of us, I don't think if anybody, if I make tashkil, who's prepared to join Malakul Maut on a journey never to return, I don't think anybody is prepared for that. But Aisha radiyallahu anha understands the nature of man. So she asked Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, Ya Rasulallah, kulluna nakrahu al-maut. All of us don't, we are not anxious to see death. There isn't a person that is anxious to meet up with death. Though we believe, though we're working in that same direction, but we are not anxious to meet up with death. So what's the reason? So let me explain. When a believer is coming towards his end of the journey, then Allah Ta'ala shows him what he's got in store for him. Slowly, in some way or the other, makes him recognize, makes him understand, see things from a different perspective. Before it was just your enjoyment that you were looking at. You were just looking at some recreation. You were just looking at some pastime. This was what you were looking at. As long as we didn't see what Allah Ta'ala has got on the other end, when you have got a glimpse of what Allah Ta'ala has got for you, this is forgotten. Right? When a little child, right, so you gave him a plastic scooter, so he likes it. Hey, my father, what a kind father, what a good person he is, right? He'll have all the words of praise for you. He'll sing in praise of you, he'll talk about you, he'll write a poetry about you, small little child, right? 7, 8 years of age, or 6 years of age, or 5 years of age, he's playing around with the plastic scooter. But when he's about 25 and 30, now this plastic scooter got no meaning. Now he wants a real scooter. Or it's a real car. So now this thing has got no meaning. In front of reality, this has got no meaning. So, exactly the same, when the reality opens out, then this world has got absolutely no meaning. It's meaningless. Hey, what is this kacharada? What am I running after? What is this dirt and filth that I am soaked in? So then you begin to realize that that's the real life, and this is just a transitory, fleeting thing. It was just for me to amuse myself, to pass around, pass my days, take it as an amusement. That's the reality. That's what you're going, that's the real thing. The worker that comes to work, the lunch break is just for a little bit of amusement, refreshing, so that the next leg of the journey goes right. So it wasn't, he doesn't come to work for the refreshment. He doesn't come for the lunch break. Going to eat. Why are you working for this company? No, I like the lunch. I like the interval. I like the lunch break. But you lost the spot. That is not the idea of working here. The idea is to accomplish. This is, by the way, just to entertain you, just to amuse you, brighten your spirits. For you to freshen up, we give you an interval. So this is the world. It's a little bit of an interval. This is reality. This is, by the way, that is reality. So Allah Ta'ala takes an oath. Bin nafsil lawwama. First, by the day of Qiyamah. And that, what is the spanner in the work? You want to know what is the spanner in the work? So the spanner in the work is this nafs. You want to do the thing, you see, you know, you heard a bayan, you read a kitab, you saw someone passing away, you went to a qabristan. You're seeing that this is reality, you can't avoid, right? You understood that it's unavoidable, right? And it's not negotiable. Death is not negotiable. You can't negotiate the terms Malakul Maut. No negotiable. You know it's a reality. You know it's genuine. But then the nafs comes and blocks you. It confuses your mind. Your sight is confused. You are dazed. So what is the thing that is causing the confusion? Is the nafs that's within you. Aada, your worst enemy is your nafs. Now, then you ask, what is the nafs? Inna nafsa la ammaratum bisu. So Allah Ta'ala says, the nafs violently commands, what? Commands to do what? Commands that you must accomplish my desires. I desire for this, then you must accomplish this. This is the nafs. This is the nature of the nafs. I've got a desire. I want this type of wealth. So you must see to it that you do it. So the whole body is enslaved to the nafs. I got this project. This I need to accomplish. So the nafs must give that instruction. And then the entire body will cooperate to see that that is accomplished. So this is nafs. It will keep you absolutely restless. Inna nafsa la'ammaratum bisu. The first ayat in the 13th sipara. Nafs violently commands you. Aggressive. It's very aggressive. He is not a calm person. Very aggressive. But you must do this. Sleeping, it will break your sleep. You're with friends, break your friends. With family, break your family. Just to see that you can meet and conform with its demands. So that's nafs. So, the way to get your journey right, your direction right, is to keep this nafs in control. You can't kill it. Because it's a vehicle. You need a vehicle to move on, right? Now, when you need a vehicle to move on, so you can't discard it entirely. You can't say, no, I'll starve you totally. You won't get anything. So you won't have any stamina. Where you going to get the stamina from? So it doesn't mean that you will totally crush down and kill the nafs. How are you going to work then? If it's dead, how are you going to work? So you need the nafs, but you need to have the nafs under control, absolute control. Don't give it that open license, that open door policy. Well, nafs, you tell the nafs, you don't have an open door policy, do as you will. Can't. Yes, I will control you. Allah will control. The soul will control you. That you will do this, you won't do this. The soul will make you understand this reason. And then it is the command of Allah Ta'ala that will prevail. So it's the nafs. Call it temptation, call it emotion, call it sentiments. That's the first. Above the sentiments and all that is the soul, that is the intelligence, the reasoning. So you have to reason. A simple way to get your action right, in the words of the two-point plan. Ta'ammul and tahammul. Two-point plan. Ta'ammul and tahammul. Before you want to embark on to, I feel appeased. Someone gave me a mouthful, right? So I gave it to him. I gave it to him. So he went against the grain. I smashed him down. So I was appeased for what I have done. I was appeased, right? When I smashed him down, I was appeased for what I have done. But later on in life, after a year or something, then I have regrets. I have remorse. I'm remorseful for what I've done. I became very, very disturbed with the wife. I let her have it. I gave it to her. Now she's not talking to me. It's a month already and she's not talking. She's turned her face away. And she is now threatening to leave the home, marital home. Now, at the moment that I expressed my anger to her, I felt very, hey, I gave her a piece of my mind. I told her what I wanted. Now, it's 1 month past. I can't get my sleep right. I can't see anybody that's giving me a good face in the house. So, what is the short term? What is the long term consequence? Think before you're doing anything. Anything, but small work, long term, short term. So, وَلَا أُقْسِمُ بِالنَّفْسِ اللَّوَّامَةِ. So, you will think for the short term, you will think for the long term. I perform my namaz, now I'm feeling very well. I'm sleeping well. But some way the laziness overcame me. I'm not performing my namaz on time. So at the time that the laziness overcame me, I slept. And I didn't perform my namaz. I felt nice for that moment. But then the whole day became miserable. As any Muslim that is regular with his fajr namaz, he just got up and the sleep overtook him. He didn't perform the namaz. You know, when he was supposed to be performing the namaz, he didn't perform it. He made qaza later on, Allah Ta'ala forbid. But does he find comfort throughout the day? throughout the day he feels miserable, doesn't feel nice, he becomes edgy, small things will disturb him, small things will play around with him. Why? He started the day with the wrong. But as a token of appreciation for the life, that extension in life he gave you, you started off by disobeying. And you're supposed to be starting off the day with some obedience, some act of gratitude. Allah, this additional day that you have blessed me, and I'm very grateful for this. I'm appreciative for this additional day that you have granted me. Otherwise, many times you hear, man went to sleep and never get up. Don't we hear? Young people, 28, 29 years of age, man went to sleep and never get up afterwards. Don't we hear that? So he starts off the day, and with a token of appreciation, gratitude, Allah, this is the additional benefit that you have given me. So I am thankful. Mark as a token of appreciation, I'll come to the masjid, perform 2 rakat namaz, 2 rakat sunnah, 2 rakat faraz, read some Quran Sharif, then I will start the day. Now you got the blessings of Allah. Now the whole day you feel so nice. Fasbaha nashitan nafs. Hadith says he is bright for that day. For the whole day is bright. And otherwise, فَأَصْبَحَ خَبِيثًا نَفْسِ الْكَسْلَانِ. Otherwise, if he doesn't perform the namaz in the morning, the whole day is miserable. He feels sluggish. I also take multivitamins to supplement. You can't. That multivitamin won't supplement. You will get some artificial strength, but you won't get the real strength. Just the imaginary strength that you've got. So you don't have the backing with Allah Ta'ala. You don't have the support from Allah Ta'ala. Because you forgot him at the beginning of the day. Now how do you expect your day to go well? You feel miserable, you feel upset, you want to fight with people, you want to argue with people. But where you started off from, you start from this point, that you didn't start off the day in a good note with Allah Ta'ala. So your whole day becomes miserable. But you started off with peace, no war with Allah Ta'ala. Start off with peace. So he's guiding you, alright, don't do this business, do this thing here. Don't work like this, don't do it like this. Talk like this, don't talk like this. So throughout the day, Allah Pak is guiding you. The whole day goes well. Your family is happy with you and you are happy with the family. So, Allah speaks about the nafs, right? And I say the first level is the nafs al-ammara. That thing is violently takes you to the wrong. It doesn't want to hear anything. It takes you. It tells you also my way or the highway. It doesn't want to negotiate. It's so violent. You know. Just do it. Saturday night comes. I want to do this. Holiday comes, I want to do this. And then you just give in to your nafs. Whatever it is, I must do it. Whether the Shariat allows it or say, hey, just leave the Shariat now, because it's our amusement day. It's a festive season. So let me do the thing. Afterwards you make Tawbah and come online again. Don't we hear in the festive season that so many people die? Yes. They went out to celebrate, enjoy, and they never came back. We hear the stories. We hear the story all the time. So, La uqsimu bin nafsil lawama. That nafs, that soul, that it's ever approaching, reproaching soul. It reproaches you, reprimands you. What's wrong with you? Why? What are you doing? Why aren't you getting your namaz right? So your self, your conscience is reproaching you. You want to lie down before, your soul is reproaching you. Why? You won't go to sleep now. You sleep now, perhaps you will miss out your Isha namaz. You'll get up at 1 o'clock in the morning, miss out your jamaat. So your soul is reproaching you. You know, you're not doing right. Call it the soul, call it the conscience. Don't really call it conscience, my conscience is disturbing me. I robbed the person, my conscience is disturbing me. I'm supposed to pay the person, I didn't pay him, my conscience is disturbing me. So this is the second grade. Your nafs is developing. It's improving. But it's improving now, it's going to reproach you. See, the importance of keeping it in check. When you don't keep it in check and you give into it, it'll let you collapse. It'll drop you slowly, slowly, slowly. See, the nafs and shaitan, they work in cahoots. So the shaitan is the instructor, and the nafs, it accomplishes. The shaitan only instructs. What he does, he instructs. He doesn't do the work. No, it's not the shaitan that did the work. It's you that did the work. But shaitan communicates with what? He communicates with the nafs. He says, hey, you know what, hey, leave all Qiyamah and all these all dreams, man. That thing will come on its own time. Just listen to me, enjoy yourself. You know, why kill yourself? Why? So the communication with Shaitan and the nafs. One person wants to go for Hajj. You see, olden days you're talking of, you know, go for Hajj. So he's got a young daughter, 16, 17 years of age, and for some reason he can't accompany her to Hajj, you know. But he's got this daughter and he needs to go for Hajj. Now he's thinking, what must I do? I've got this daughter of mine and I need to go for Hajj, and she can't be accompanying me in this whole journey. Now what do I do? So he's thinking about playing around with the idea. Then he thought to himself that he's a pious person. I see in this town here, he comes to the masjid quite frequently. I will ask him to help me out, that just keep her until I come from Hajj. Olden days now, you're going by camel or by horse. Wherever you're going, wherever you're starting off your journey, but you're starting off your journey on an animal. So going and returning is about a 7-8 month journey. Imagine you're leaving from South Africa right to Makkah by horse. So how much of provision you must take, how much of money you must take, and slowly you're moving. I think you're going to cover perhaps 50, 70 k's a day, every day now. Some days it's not feeling well, so you stop over, right? Sometimes the weather conditions are not right. So how long it takes you? Then Hajj, how long it'll take you? Then Makkah, Medina, how long it'll take you? Then the return, how long it'll take you? So all in all, you look at about 7-8 months, like 1 year journey. And I say, I can't take this young daughter of mine, but she's too young for this type of a journey. But then, I need to go for Hajj, what do I do? So he saw some person that's a little bit pious in the town. So he thought him to be a very pious person. So he said, alright, you know what, I got his daughter. Hey, the man said, no, you know what, it's a woman and it's fire. Because a man and a woman, you know, it's like a dynamite. It's you know, you're sitting on a time bomb. You don't know when that thing will explode. Woman, you're a company of a woman, you don't know when it will explode. When the nafs within you will explode. So you can't be complacent. There's a woman around you. Nobody can be complacent, whether it's a doctor, whether it's your secretary that's around you. But you cannot be complacent for that moment. You can't be complacent. You don't know when that explosion will take place. Mustafa Rahmatullah Ali, one person came up to him. Villager, and all these villagers, they speak very straight. They don't go in circles, they tell you straight. It's good of them that they tell you whatever is needed to be said, but they say it straight so you know what the man is telling. But he's doing too much of diplomacy and all that, and he's missing the point sometimes. He's going so much round that the point is missed. So he says to Mustafa Rahmatullah, you know what? My younger brother, he's coming up of age. About 13. But my wife talks to him very, very openly. And sometimes they hit a 5. You know. So they're doing all this thing here, they're carrying on. But he's talking very casually. Though my wife is quite elderly, he's 15, so she's about 35. But now they're carrying on very casually. And I don't like this idea. So Mufti Sahab Rahmatullah tried to test this person, what was in his mind. You know, you just give him the answer straight away, then you don't know what he's talking about. He was asking, but what's wrong? You know, he's a young boy, and she's quite elderly, so what's wrong? So, that villager, as I say, the villagers, they speak very frankly, very clearly. So he said, na Muftiji, na na na. He says, no, not at all. Malum nahi kab current lag jaye. You don't know when the current will just strike. You know, you're playing around, you're talking very casually. But when something will just strike, you don't know. You can't trust the nafs. Everything must be going very well, very smooth. But at which point the nafs overtakes you, and then it blinds you. You become like a drunken person until you haven't done that. You're drunken. Or temptation. After the temptation, you've done whatever you've done, then only your eyes will, hey, what have I done now? What have I done now? Now you need to do a damage control. Hide this thing, hide that thing, do this, don't do this. Just a damage control. But not realizing that the one upstairs knows what's happened. So no person can say that I can be safe. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is sitting in i'tikaf, you know. So it's nafs. And how we need to be looking after, taking care of. He's sitting in i'tikaf. Hazrat Safiya radiyallahu anha, she is like the princess of the Jews, Jewish princess, and she accepted Islam of her own accord. And she came into the marriage of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, right? So she became the Azwaja Mutahharat, the mother of the believers. So she was a princess here, now she became like a queen, the mother of all the believers in the Mubarak residence of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi is sitting in Atikaf. She wanted to visit Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So she visited Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Perhaps it was towards the evening. And Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam felt, I must accompany her to the entrance. Because from the entrance to her house is quite near. But I should accompany her at least to the entrance. So as Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi is accompanying her to the entrance of the masjid, two Ansari Sahaba are walking past. So when they saw Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam with the woman, so they just hurried on, you know. Like you see someone with his wife, you don't want to be there. Because he's a stranger to you, so you don't want to be casual with them. It's his wife, it is his respect and honor. I can't become casual with both of them. Yes, I can become casual with my friend, not with his wife. So they hurried on. When they hurried on, the bishop said, Allah risdikum, let's hold on. So, then the bishop explained to them, Hadihi Safiya. This is my respected wife, Hazrat Safiya radiallahu anha. So those two Sahaba ikram, they spoke out in amazement, Ya Rasulullah, you know, how can we ever have any suspicion against your integrity and against your personality of all people? Of all people, how can we ever have any suspicion against your integrity? So Nabi Sallam replied to them, Inna shaytana la yajri min al insani majra dam. Shaytan, don't be fooled with the nafs. Don't be fooled with the shaytan. That thing runs in your blood. So I was afraid shaytan will cast some aspersions in your mind against my integrity. Create some suspicions in your mind against my integrity. If you are going to have any doubt about your Nabi, your iman is gone, demolished straight away. So I had to point out to you that this is my respected wife, that you don't have any suspicions about myself. So the lesson that we learn is we don't act and conduct ourselves in a suspicious manner. Now you've got a secretary working next to you. Or you've got a nurse now, and she's working with you all the time. You're talking to her very friendly, very freely. Right? Now, she is under obligation, then you'll get that same woman come and complain to us. Well, this is what this person did. So, now I have to take on the job because I am responsible for the home. I bring food to the home, so I am indebted to the man. But now that man is taking advantage over me. This is what he's doing. So she will come and complain here. That person doesn't know what's going on. But then, in the eyes of people, then he loses respect. So, how important it is not to be in an area of suspicion. Right? You want a bottle of Coke, right? On a bottle of Coke, and the bar is selling Coke and Sprite. Do you ever enter the bar to buy that Coke or the Sprite?